Burrow and our whole team in New York. I'll be with Brian Stevenson and Sarah Lewis with the documentarian Ken Burns and the former British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, as well as Wynton Marsalis and others today at 4 o'clock Edinburgh time at the King's Theatre, tomorrow at the Bertha Dock House in London.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Hi, this is Al McFarlane, host of The Conversation with Al McFarlane. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to have you along as well. Well, today's an important day. It's a major step on the way to the victory that we seek as community. Today is primary election day here in Minnesota. And what I want to do again and again and again over the next hour is to remind you to make sure that you get out and vote. Not only should you get out and vote, but you got to figure out how to make sure everybody in your house, everybody you know, everybody around is aware and takes the steps to cast their vote today. There's so much at stake. We wanted to discuss that today. And in fact, I'd love to have you, our dear friends on the KFAI audience and on our social media platforms, weigh in on important topics. And our goal is simply, in a nonpartisan way, to encourage all of us to take this duty, this responsibility for stewardship in the elections, take it seriously, and to get out to the polls today to vote. And I'd love to talk to you about things that you think are important. What are the issues that are driving your involvement, your priorities? Let's say what they are. You can join me in this conversation if you're watching on any of the streaming platforms on Facebook or LinkedIn or YouTube. There's a join the show link. Click on that with your phone. It's a QR code. Click on. You show up in my waiting room. We'll bring you in. I'd love to have your voice. And if you are listening on the radio, we can have you just simply, when you get a chance, pull over and go online and do the same thing, join the program, or comment if you're watching on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, drop a note in the comment section. We'd love to have your voice in this conversation. So today's the day. It's election day and just a lot going on. And here's kind of what you need to know about today, some important things. So primaries often decide the options. That's why the primary is important. The primary set the lineup for November, and voting today ensures that candidates who represent community priorities make it to the November ballot. You can find out about that, the primary election process, at the Secretary of State, www.sos.mn.gov. That's the Minnesota Secretary of State. And if you go there, you'll get the lineup for who's on the ballot today and who's going to be on the ballot in November once today's decisions are made. And so, again, we encourage you to vote today in Minnesota's primary election. Today is a chance to focus on impact, on direct local representation. As I said, the primary set the lineup for November, and voting today ensures that candidates who represent community priorities make it to the main ballot. This is about local power and community impact as well. Included on the ballot in the primary, county commissioners, judges, municipal leaders who directly control the budgets, public safety, housing policy, parks, and regional transit development. That's why it's important. Are you sure that you're eligible to vote? Well, there is same day registration. So if you're not registered or not sure, you can vote directly at your designated polling place as long as you have proof of residence. Today, the polls opened at 7 this morning, and they're going to be open till 8 p.m. this evening. And anybody in line by 8 p.m., you get there at 7:59 p.m., and the line is long. Your vote matters. Your vote counts. You will get to vote. And in the primary, there's no party registration required. Minnesota uses an open primary system. That means that voters can select one major political party ballot for partisan races, but you can also vote nonpartisan in local races that are listed on the reverse side of your ballot. So watch for that. So what's on the ballot? Let me tell you what's on the ballot today. And again, you know, I'd love to have you share with me and our audience what your issues are, your concerns are. And you do that by, if you're online, click on the QR code at the top of the screen. It's right up here. Click on the code and we'll bring you into this conversation. So offices on the ballot, just so you know, if you don't know, the U.S. Senate seat for Minnesota is on the ballot. Also, U.S. House of Representatives. So let's see. I'm looking at Ballotpedia just to give you a background and give you the source of what I'm using to share this conversation with you. One second here. Okay, U.S. Senate seat, I'll go into details momentarily. There are in Twin Cities, Hennepin County, U.S. House of Representatives for District 3 and District 5 in Hennepin County and District 4 in Ramsey County. District 3, Angie Craig seat. District 5, Ilhan Omar seat. District 4, Congresswoman Betsy, I'm having a senior moment now, but the name will come back, Betty McCollum in St. Paul, her seat's on the ballot. We have the governor and lieutenant governor races. We have secretary of state race with state auditor race and attorney general. Specifically about Hennepin County, Hennepin County attorney, big race, big important, a big field. I think five people applying or seeking to be the Democratic nominee. And I think the way it works is that the top two vote getters will be on the ballot in November. So Hennepin County attorney is on the ballot. Hennepin County Board of Commissioners for District 2 and District 3. That's on the ballot today for the primary. The Three Rivers Park District Board of Commissioners, District 1, and the Minnesota 4th District Judicial Offices on the ballot today. How about Ramsey County? Ramsey County Board of Commissioners, District 5, has a primary. Minnesota's 2nd District Court Judicial Offices are on the ballot. And municipal primaries in communities like Roseville for the mayor and city council. And I'll give you more details as I come across those in our notes here. Again, you can verify the exact polling place and view a customized sample ballot for where you live, where your vote matters, by going to the Minnesota Secretary of State. It's called the Polling Place Finder, and you get the information you need about where you vote and which seats are on the ballot that will be yours. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland, and we're talking about voting. Today is primary election day here in Minnesota. We'd love to have you involved in the conversation as well. And, you know, why is voting important? I think we need to have conversations in community and in our families about both the duty and the responsibilities that we have to vote. I take voting seriously because my parents voted. My father is an immigrant. He came here from Jamaica, but he's Cuban born, a naturalized citizen. And I remember growing up in Kansas City, Missouri, that my parents and my entire family took the question of voting and civil rights and human rights very seriously from the beginning. One of my earliest memories, I remember that in 1959, I would have been in the sixth grade, I believe, and even in 53, maybe before that, our family, we were what we called Eisenhower Republicans at that time. This was before Kennedy became a candidate. And we were Eisenhower Republicans because at that time, we had the idea that the Republicans represented business and entrepreneurship. We were a small business family, even in the late 50s. My parents bought and owned and ran a grocery store in Kansas City, Missouri. We bought it from the Jewish merchant that owned the store that my mother worked for. And when he was ready to retire, he made, you know, the suggestion, we made the offer. We bought the store. And I remember growing up in the store, working in third, fourth, and fifth grade in our family business, delivering groceries, stocking the shelves, but also selling a Jet magazine and the Kansas City Call, which was the black weekly newspaper in Kansas City, Missouri. Why is that important? Jet magazine gave me a sense of what was happening with our people around the country and around the world. And I'm going to come back to this in a minute to show you the difference of information systems and why information matters. The Kansas City Call is a historic legacy. Black newspaper, I'd say it's on the same par in terms of legacy, impact, and power as our own Minnesota spokesman and recorder. Papers founded by the great Cecil Newman and carried on by his family publishing today. A great job being done by his successors, Tracy Williams Dillard, now publishing and running that great newspaper. Why is it important? I remember watching when the political season came up, there'd be tons and tons of advertising from the Democratic Party in particular, but others, mobilizing black voters in Kansas City to get out and to vote our interest. And Kansas City that I grew up in, black Kansas City, was a hotbed of political activity. I think it was, I can't remember the exact name of the political party. Kind of remind you, I think it was like the Freedom Democratic Party. And there was an activism in the black community to get black people registered and voting. We were at a period too in the 50s and 60s where we moved towards segregation that was formal to integration after 54. Some of us went to schools that had been previously all white. Some of us began to move into neighborhoods that had been all white. And we saw the movement, I saw the movement of our community kind of block by block as we grew and expanded as a community. And in doing so, we expanded our political voice and political presence as well. I just remember that as a store owner and as a retailer, it was important for me to remember and to note that the lifeblood of the community was the black newspaper, the Kansas City Call. And also the lifeblood was the national picture provided by Jet Magazine. And the reason I bring this story up is that some years later, as I grew up, came to Minnesota, I worked for a small paper in southwestern Minnesota first, called the Worthington Daily Globe, when I went to a community college there. And from there came to the University of Minnesota, came to work for the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and eventually launched my own newspaper. When I began the newspaper, I would go to organizations like the Minnesota Department of Health and others and say, you know, you all need to advertise and communicate to black people in a black newspaper. And I was met with a sense of contempt and disdain, arrogant, dismissive white people couldn't figure out why in the world would anyone white need to talk to anybody black in a black newspaper. That was the attitude. And they almost said it in those words. In fact, when I had proposed early on collaboration with my colleagues in other parts of the community in South Minneapolis in particular, even among the progressives, the counterculture, when I said, you know what, guys, I'm doing a lot of stuff in North Minneapolis. I'm in Northeast Minneapolis. You guys have a strong presence in South Minneapolis. Why don't we figure out how we can collaborate to unite to create a strong community-driven, community-based publication that reflects all of our demographics and all of our presence and all of our interests here, even though we may not always be on the same page, but we can create a space that we can negotiate. And of course, what I experienced in that was again, contempt by even the progressive whites, the counterculture whites, who at the end of the day didn't see that they could participate in the empowerment and the giving of voice or the acknowledging of voice, presence, and standing of black people here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So even my counterculture friends said, you know what? It's like there's certain things I can't do, and one of them is take direction from you, black man, Al McFarland. Well, I went to the Minnesota Department of Health. I just remember this story of going to the Minnesota Department of Health when the AIDS, HIV epidemic broke. And early on, I think we mentioned this in last week's program when I talked with Michael Cole and other people who are active in the HIV the gay, lesbian, black, trans community about HIV health and health policy. We went to the Minnesota Health Department saying to them, you know, we'd love to have you talk to our communities, black, Asian, Latino, and others about HIV, how it's contracted, how you prevent it, you know, where it came from, the public policy crisis and solutions that are being developed as they are developed. How do we educate our community? And the response we got at first from the commissioner of the health department was, we think we're doing a good job in talking broadly about health to everybody in Minnesota. And when we make statements into the Star Tribune or to the Pioneer Press, you know, the white press, they didn't call it that, I called it that. We make statements on television and radio, the CCOs and KSTPs and KMSPs and Carrie Levins. We think we're covering everybody, including your people. And so we don't think we need to divest or invest any special energy or special money in communicating to black people in what you've presented, Al McFarland, as black-owned and black-oriented media. And so, you know, I said, well, you know, you are communicating and giving important information to the public at large in the daily newspaper, but what if a large segment of the population is not using the daily newspaper? Don't you have an obligation to speak to that part of the population as well? And don't you have an obligation to speak to them where and how they want to be spoken to? Because it's not in the Star Tribune and not in the Pioneer Press. My argument was that at that time, in general, the white press of America was the bulwark, the framer, the shaper of white supremacist thought, of a viewpoint of the world that kind of suggested that God was white people's idea and anything else was an afterthought and therefore inconsequential. And as a young communicator, a young journalist, and a young advocate for my community, for black people, black sensibility, I challenged that and I invited other ethnic media to come along as well. But I remember one meeting in particular, I went to talk about why they should talk to the black community about HIV, AIDS, both education, awareness, prevention, et cetera. And they said, well, you know, we don't know if your people even read. Because if they can read, they can read the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press. And I said, well, let me ask you something. Have you ever heard of Jet Magazine? They said, no, what's that? No, what's that? Well, Jet Magazine is what we read, because Jet Magazine doesn't demonize, doesn't marginalize, doesn't reduce us to an afterthought. We are at the center of the discussion in Jet Magazine, as we are in Ebony Magazine. What's the point? The point is that we have an entire information ecosystem that you are totally unaware of, and that you actually choose to not recognize as valid and valuable and effective. But we have that, and we're growing that. And what we are doing now, I said back in those days, was demanding that you, who are charged with managing state treasury, taxpayer money, to deliver information and services to the taxpayers and residents of our state, we demand that you acknowledge there are other ways to reach people, and that you are consistently failing to reach people of color in general, Black people in particular, by your boycott of Black media, by your refusal to even entertain the idea that we have both standing presence and systems that deliver credible information to our people in ways that we can both ingest and act on. So that's the argument. And so in a way, things haven't changed a lot. In fact, maybe I'll share an article that's in the current edition of Inside News. It's an article by Haley Taylor Schlitz. It's our cover story. Maybe you can pull it up, Jared, if you can find this story and put it on the screen. And I want to share that with you listeners here on KFAI, because it says that the argument I made 30 years ago about addressing the particular specific needs of Black people in venues that we own and that reflect our sensibility, our vision, our aspirations, and you know, that's still a challenge, still a problem. So I think the article is here, and you can put it on screen. I'll just sort of walk through it, and you can make it larger. I can read it from the screen. And so the article is entitled Minnesota Votes, Why Isn't Black Unemployment on the Ballot? And it says, as a subhead, Black voters should demand to know whether economic opportunity will move forward with us. So this, again, is an article by our young attorney, Haley Taylor Schlitz, Esquire. And she says, and this is yesterday's paper, this week's paper, Minnesota Votes Tuesday, that's today, is anyone talking about Black unemployment? Minnesota voters go to the polls Tuesday to decide which candidates advance to the November election. And in the final days before a primary, candidates make their closing arguments. They talk about affordability, about taxes, about public safety, about education and the economy. They tell voters that they understand what families are experiencing and are prepared to fight for a more prosperous future. But there's a number that should be part of every serious political conversation in Minnesota right now. That's the unemployment rate for Black Minnesotans. That rate, 10.7%. For white Minnesotans, it's 4.2%. Minnesota's overall unemployment rate is 4.4%. So these figures describe the same state during the same period, but they don't describe the same economy. The state calculates its racial unemployment figures using 12-month moving averages, because smaller survey samples may make individual monthly estimates less reliable. That qualification matters, but it does not make the disparity disappear. Black unemployment has risen from 7.8% a year ago The Black labor force participation rate has fallen from 75.4% to 70.5%, while the percentage of Black Minnesotans who are employed has dropped from 69.6% to 63%. So those are not small fluctuations in the lives of people behind the statistics. They represent paychecks that stopped arriving, careers that stalled, families making difficult choices, and people searching for work in a state that may not recognize their experience as an economic emergency. So, as candidates ask Black Minnesotans for their votes, are they paying attention? A new report from the Institute for Women's Policy Research makes that question especially urgent for young Black women. Its title offers a direct challenge to how our country often explains economic inequality. Barriers, not bootstraps. Job prospects are uneven for young Black women. That's the name of an article. Researchers in it examine several convenient explanations for the rising unemployment rate among young Black women. They say perhaps an unusually large number had entered the labor market and were competing for fewer jobs, too few jobs. Or they say perhaps their educational attainment has declined. They say perhaps they were pursuing occupations where opportunities were disappearing. But the evidence did not support any of those explanations. The share of young Black women in the labor force has not suddenly increased. Their educational attainment has not substantially fallen. And many are pursuing work in healthcare, private education, professional services, and other fields where significant job openings remain. They are prepared. They earn credentials. They entered fields that needed workers, but the jobs still did not come. In August of 2025, the unemployment rate for Black women between the ages of 16 and 24 reached 19%. Black women between the ages of 16 and 24, 19%. Nearly one in five young Black women participating in the labor force was unemployed. That's more than twice the unemployment rate for young white women and nearly five times the rate for all women that month. By December, unemployed Black women had spent a median of nearly 19 weeks looking for work. White women spent a median of 9 weeks unemployed. An additional 10 weeks without a job is not merely a difference on a chart. It can mean that rent cannot be paid, that student loan payments are deferred, that savings are depleted before they could grow, and a promising career beginning with extended periods of instability. It can pressure someone to accept lower pay or work far outside of her chosen field. It affects the way salaries and opportunities she may receive for years. Young Black women can begin their working lives already being placed behind. That reality collides with one of the most persistent lessons that many Black girls receive. That lesson, work twice as hard. We hear that from families trying to prepare us for a world they know may not treat us fairly. Be early, be polished, earn the degree, learn the rules. Do not give anyone a reason to question whether you belong. That lesson comes from love, from experience and survival, but buried inside it is a painful bargain. If we, speaking to Black girls, Black women, if we prepare enough, achieve enough, and become too qualified to ignore, perhaps excellence can protect us from exclusion. But the Institute of Women's Policy Research findings expose the limits of that promise. Education improves Black women's employment prospects and earnings, but it does not produce equal returns. At every educational level, examined, Black workers experienced higher unemployment than white workers, and even graduate and professional credentials did not ease the gap. Black women are not failing to invest in themselves. They are investing in a labor market that provides them with a less dependable return. They often borrow heavily to make that investment. Black women carry some of the country's highest student debt burdens, particularly when pursuing credentials for high-cost fields such as healthcare. They can accumulate debt from a certificate, then borrow more for an associate degree, a bachelor's degree, or graduate credential, all while facing less certainty that the next qualification will translate into stable employment. So we tell young Black women that education is the pathway to economic security. Then we charge them to enter that pathway to narrow their access to jobs at the other end. And then we question their choices when the security does not arrive. Let me scroll down some more here. So it's not a failure of work ethic, it's a failure of the bargain. To be clear, the labor market is difficult for many young people. Employers have slowed hiring. Recent graduates are competing for fewer openings, and positions described as entry-level increasingly demand years of previous experience. But a difficult economy does not become equitable simply because so many people are struggling. When hiring slows, employers gain more discretion. They can demand more experience, rely more heavily on personal networks, and make subjective judgments about who possesses the right attitude, the right appearance, or fit. Automated screening systems can reject candidates even before a person ever examines their qualifications. Modern discrimination does not always announce itself. It can look like an automated rejection without an explanation. It can look like an entry-level position requiring 3 years experience. It can look like praising Black woman's excellence while repeatedly choosing someone else's potential. Any individual rejection may appear reasonable in isolation, but the pattern tells us something the rejection email never will. Minnesota unemployment figures do not isolate young Black women, so they cannot tell you their precise unemployment rate in the state. But the Institute for Women's Policy research findings concerning Black women are national. So we should not collapse these two measurements into one, but we should pay attention to what they reveal together. Nationally, Black women are encountering employment barriers that cannot be explained by less education, by poor career choices, or an unusual increase in the number seeking work. In Minnesota, Black workers are experiencing an unemployment rate more than twice the white rate. That's why this conversation today is important. That should be treated as an election issue. I'm going to turn to the jump on page 7 to finish reading the article. Can you switch it for me? So I finished the article on a page that has voter information as well. And the article says, candidates often promise to create jobs. That is not enough. A job can exist without being equally accessible. An economy can grow without distributing opportunity fairly. A statewide unemployment figure can improve while concealing the crisis one community continues to experience. So she writes, this is all a commentary by our columnist, Haley Taylor Schlitz. She said, candidates seeking Black votes should be asked whether they know Minnesota's Black unemployment rate. They should explain what they believe is driving the disparity and what authority the office they seek gives them to address it. How will they evaluate whether state workforce programs are reaching Black workers? Will they require greater transparency from businesses receiving public incentives or government contracts? Will they defend pay transparency, collective bargaining, civil rights enforcement, and affordable pathways to high demand professions? Will they examine who is screened out of hiring processes rather than celebrating diversity only after someone made it through? Jobs is not a complete policy. Opportunity is not a measurable result. Candidates should tell voters what they would change, who would be accountable, who would be held accountable, and how Minnesota would determine whether the racial employment gap is actually closing. Let me read that again. Haley Taylor Schultz is saying that candidates should tell voters what they would change and who would be held accountable and how Minnesota would determine whether the racial employment gap is actually closing. The primary is today, Tuesday, August 11th. Voters today decide which candidates move forward. Oh, I lost my page there. And okay, there we go. Which four and for the November ballot, Black women, scroll up a little bit for me. Yeah, spent generations being asked whether we're qualified or prepared and willing to work. But the evidence answers these questions. The answers, Black women are qualified, prepared, and willing to work. As candidates ask for Black women's votes, Black community votes, the unanswered question belongs to them. Have they noticed the labor market Black Minnesotans are facing, and what exactly are they prepared to do about it? A primary determines who moves forward. Black voters should demand to know whether economic opportunity will move forward with us. Well, that's a powerful, powerful commentary. It's in this week's edition of Inside News. It's our cover story, as a matter of fact, front page commentary, an article by Haley Taylor Schultz. So I'm interested in your point of view, your thoughts. What about elections, this election, and what's in the balance? What's coming up? I think this is a critical time for our country and for Minnesota. What do you mean? You know, I think that a lot of Black agencies, a lot of Black organizations, Black programs, Black-led, Black-serving programs have been put into a state of shock, a state of trauma, as the state reacted to the allegations and the actuality of fraudulent activity in some of the programs over the past year coming out of the pandemic. And it seems to me that almost across the board, state agencies and organizations have slowed, reduced their engagement of Black agencies and people as solution providers. And they're justifying the move away because of the enormity of the particular specific adjudicated crimes that were associated with Feeding Our Future and other organizations that defrauded the state. But all of the state and all of the solution providers and all of the agencies and organizations that have had an effective role to play in managing and mitigating some of the challenges that come from the structural imbalance, all of those shouldn't be held back, shouldn't be stopped. And we need to, as voters, demand that this election, the primary today, and the general election, bring back into play progressive, forward-thinking, enabling activities that generate resources for our communities, Black communities, Latino, Asian, communities of color, and others, to bring our voice, our skill, our vision to play in service of our community. I'm interested in your point of view. And if you've got a comment you want to share, I would love to have you drop that comment and let us know what you think about this. There's a QR code here at the top of the screen. Love to have your voice in this conversation. What do you think? Let me review again what I opened with, and that is that, again, today is primary day in Minnesota, And the objective here is to encourage, my objective is to encourage our community to get to the polls today. I hope to, in this conversation, focus on the impact and the need for increasing direct local representation in our community. You know, just remind you that the primaries actually the gateway to the November lineup. Voting today ensures that candidates who represent community priority make it to the main ballot. Well, one of my dear friends in community has joined me now, and let's bring her in. Anika Robbins is here. Anika, how you doing, sister? Unmute your mic. Unmute. There we go.
Hello, Al. How you doing, sir?
I am well. I know that you're busy. We all are. Yes. Our shared vision is, how do we mobilize our community, elevate our voices, and get the results we want that move our community and the state forward? But let me talk to you about, you know, your organization, Black Votes Matter Minnesota, and what's on your agenda today and between now and November as well.
Thank you so much for having me on. I always appreciate it. Love spending time with you. BVM is alive and well. We're out here engaging our communities. I just had a great energizing call with our team up in Duluth, helping them get energized and out to vote. We're working in collaboration with several groups here in the Twin Cities. The goal is just to get people out to vote, right? And then, you know, our mainstay, our niche is the educational piece. We realize that a lot of people still don't really understand the value and impact of voting, much less who's actually on the ballot. And so that's really what we are focused on. We published our 2026 Black Votes Matter Minnesota preview guide, which kind of just let people know what to expect and start getting it into their mindset, their psyche. And then we will have our full-fledged guide out at the end of August that will have, you know, the winners, the front runners from each of the obviously large parties. But we also do, you know, highlight, you know, the green candidates, libertarians, and so forth, as we are nonpartisan. But here's the thing. The primary is a sifting process, right? Mm-hmm. So there are several candidates within each party that are running. And so our job today is simply to go in and just select the one team. So the governor, lieutenant governor candidates, the U.S. Senate, and then there's several county seats. Mm-hmm. And I really want to stress the importance of the county seats, right? Hennepin County, for instance, is the largest county in Minnesota, has the largest budget, but it also has the most impact on health and human services, jails, criminal justice, hospitals, railways, and schools, several things, okay? Y'all don't want to sit this one out, okay? Because this one, you're choosing your district commissioner. So those of us who live in District 2, there are four women of color vying for that seat, including the incumbent, Irene Fernando. But we have Sharon El Amin, we have Makeda Zulu, and another person, Ms. Valencia. They're all vying to run and represent you for District 2. Mm-hmm. So this is critical. You know, when you think about resources around COVID-19 relief, emergency assistance, these are the people that make those decisions. You know, the amount of money to deploy into our communities, youth violence prevention projects with several Black-led organizations have received funding to implement that work. Then you have your county attorney. You know, we were kind of the ones that blew the lid on that, because for many years, people did not know that that was an elected seat. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason, Mike Freeman at the time said he was in that role for 20 years. And so, you know, we have Mary Moriarty, who is the incumbent, but she is not seeking reelection. Right. And so you have other folks, I think it's about five people running for that seat. Mm-hmm. So it's important to get involved. So it's county sheriff, county attorney, and county commissioners. For both Hennepin and Ramsey County, there's a brother running in Washington County and several others. In the St. Louis, which is Duluth, Twin Ports area, there's county commission race there and a city council race. Then we know St. Cloud is a stronghold. We do have a strong Black community and African immigrant communities in St. Cloud and Worthington and others. So listen, if you marched and protested and, you know, and spent hours and days doing that, then I'm going to ask you to take 10 minutes, because that's as long as it took me today, to go to your polling location and vote. This is the first time you're going to vote. Then you're going to vote again on Tuesday, November 3rd, where we make our final selections. And of course, that's governor, lieutenant governor, U.S. Senate, attorney general, and then U.S. auditor. And there's another seat, House of Reps, I believe. And then all of the local races, school board and county.
So it's important,
yes.
Critically important. You know,
yes.
Let me ask you to sort of take off your Black Votes Matter hat.
Okay.
No, and just talk as Anika. And
okay.
I'm taking off my Insight Editor hat and talking
awesome.
As Al. Yeah, just and so,
yes.
and I'm saying that so that I want to get at how we look at the country and the world right now, because I think it's critical. Anika, I'm a little bit scared.
Okay.
Because I'm scared of the way our president and the Republican Party have right. moved the country. I fear that they might try to cook up a way to invalidate the elections next in 28, right?
Yeah.
And they're moving to install people at local elections that will do their dirty work and to keep our votes suppressed. Mm-hmm. And if that's the move, what do we do about it? Because, you know, again, I don't want to be Chicken Little saying the sky is falling.
Right,
But the sky is falling right now.
Yeah.
And if we don't pay attention, we'll be waking up in another situation that we should have said, oh, we knew better than this.
Yeah.
I'm sort of speaking euphemistically now, but I'm going to get very specific in a minute. But what's your, you know the vibe.
Oh, listen. Yes, sir. I'm clear. I think that your concerns are valid, and you are speaking the unspoken into the atmosphere, and we have to be very clear about the realities of what we are faced with and what we have been faced with. And I think that this conversation is timely because we have spent probably the better half of the last 2 years, like, they wouldn't do that, would they? They're not really gonna do that. But listen, so much.
Anika, it's like saying they're not really hanging us, are they? Because that's what's happening. Too many people showing up dead, hanging from a tree or something in this country. Black women, Black men, Black boys, too many.
Still.
Too many.
Yep.
And so, and we can say they're not really doing that, are they? And it's happening.
Touche. Yeah. You know, it's so sad that that is a reality that so often that has been normalized.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, myself as a Black mother, I carry that. It's just part of the baggage of being here. And it's in my soul. And it's in my spirit. Keenly aware of it. Just real pause there. You know, conversations that I've had personally, you know, with friends in different groups, we've talked about, you know, survival kits, and we've talked about, you know, we're seeing. So let's start with what we see. Okay. Mm-hmm. What we are seeing are cyber threats.
Mm-hmm.
We see young Black men, women, and children being lynched. Mm-hmm. Okay, we see these things. These are not things that we could sweep under the rug. We see attacks to our water supply. We see attacks to food security, right? So we're seeing all these things. And, you know, they have a blueprint. There are individuals, they've been working from a plan. And much of the plan has come to fruition. And so we can't continue to vacillate in this space of, are they really going to do it? Listen, this is a bigger conversation around survival. So our youth leaders, I'm really proud of our young leaders who are leading Black Votes Matter Minnesota now. They get it. You know, we've been grooming them for the past 11 years. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing, and they understand that it's their role and their time to get involved, right? And to fight. But we also have to teach people what fighting looks like. I think it's so easy to say you have to fight or you have to vote. But what you're voting for is your safety, your way of life, for the freedom to vote. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, the president said that he's trying to get it to a place where you don't have to vote again. Mm-hmm. That is documented. That is neither a partisan or not bipartisan conversation. That is basically, he's presenting it as like, I'm going to do y'all a favor by y'all not having to vote anymore. That mm-hmm. is not a favor. That is disenfranchisement. That is mm-hmm. marginalization. That is dictatorship. And so I think we need to stop like the cognitive dissonance and the waxing, waning, you know, sometimes you got to look at what you see, what your mm-hmm. eyes see and what you are reading that is validated information. And you mm-hmm. have to make an informed decision. So I think our families need to protect themselves. We've been talking about, you know, safe, trusted food sources, sources of water. I think that we should expect more violence, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I think that we should expect, you know, we've been encouraging people not to mail in their ballots. We've been encouraging people to go directly to the election office to drop it off in person. Mm,
for early voting.
For early voting, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Don't, you know, because, you know, we've been hearing things back and forth with the U.S. Postal Service. So let's mm-hmm. listen. Let's not take any of those chances. Now, mm-hmm. in Minnesota, we don't really see these types of shenanigans, but there mm-hmm. are some things. And we are aware that the Department of Justice has deployed monitors to Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center in Minneapolis, right? Mm-hmm. But Minnesota has always led the nation in early voting turnout. And we mm-hmm. did again this year already. Mm-hmm. And we will continue to lead. But the part that keeps me getting up every morning doing this work is that unfortunately, Black voter turnout remains underwhelming. Mm-hmm. And so my thing is this. Have we exhausted every possible tool at our disposal to affect the outcomes that we desire for ourselves, our families, and our communities? The answer is no, right? Mm-hmm. So if I look at the 554-1011 and 12 zip codes on the north side of Minneapolis, it's mm-hmm. 44,000 and change of mm-hmm. residents. Roughly about 10-15% of that population actually shows up to vote. Mm-hmm. And then a smaller percentage of that is Black women, and even smaller, nil, are Black men. But Black men and Black women are the most overrepresented in all of the disparities, criminal justice, health, et cetera, et cetera. So we can't get comfortable just lashing out, crying out in our pain. Mm-hmm. Voting has got to be the simplest, easiest, nonviolent form of having your voice be heard and getting closer to the resources and the leadership that you need to get the outcomes that you desire. And so that's really what we're on. So I would say stay vigilant. If anybody is experiencing, like someone's trying to turn you away from the polls, let us know. BlackVotesMatterMN.org. Hit me. Everyone's on my Facebook page. Inbox me, post on my page, whatever. Hey, they're not letting me vote. BlackVotesMatterMN.org. And, you know, the Attorney General's office is monitoring the Department of Justice activities, Hennepin County attorneys monitoring, and the Secretary of State, right? So they are committed to not let anyone be disenfranchised, mm-hmm. right? But please don't do the thing of leaving your vote on the table. Most times these elections are dictated by the 2/3 of the community that actually shows up to vote.
Well, too often in our community, Anika, people will say there's no real choice between candidate A, candidate B, so I'm going to just sit and do nothing. But to do nothing is a choice.
It is a choice.
To do nothing surrenders your power to somebody else. So I think that the most important thing, no matter which side you fall on, go vote. Go vote. Yeah. You may agree with me or may not, you know, but what is definitely inappropriate is for us to discourage people from exercising their vote.
Yes. And it's none of your business who someone else votes for. So I got a dear colleague that reached out to me that so-called white allies were, you know, chastising her for endorsing certain people. You know, listen, we're seeing more and more candidates of color enter the races, and I'm proud of that. I'm glad to see it. We're in a very interesting time. This is a changing of the guard right now, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of the unspoken that's coming up. We got population changes, okay? So what was predicted to be the Browning, I call it the Great Browning, was projected for, 2050? It's already happening. There was a report that came out in February, you know, more America's now majority minority. Mm-hmm. So that's why we see the reversal of Roe v. Wade and several other, you know, the purging of immigrant communities, our neighbors. This is like a last stand, you know, to preserve a particular way of life, right? Mm-hmm. So you're voting for a lot more than just, you know, kind of what's up top here. So you also need to be in the mindset of survival and protecting your family, your communities, you know, your businesses. And that's the other thing. I always encourage folks, we need to be focused on economic empowerment in our communities. Mm. So building your businesses, buying businesses, shopping Black. We need to really normalize those things, okay? Mm-hmm. So voting is part of it. Like, that's one power tool in your box. Maintaining good health and wellness is another tool. And your economic prosperity, managing your money, those things go hand in hand, and they are all political. And all of those things are on the ballot today.
Can we pull up your website real quick, Jared? Can you pull up? Jared can pull it up and just show people.
Thank you.
How to stay connected to you, and thank you for the work that you do. And it's critical. It's critical.
Thank you, Mr. McFarland. I have tremendous respect for you, as you know. Thank you for always including us in your programming and helping us get the word out to the community. This is a labor of love for us. I've done it with and without funding. Because, you know, sometimes they want to invest in Black votes. Sometimes they don't, you know.
So we got about a minute. Walk us through a little bit here.
So this is our website. It's chock full of resources. If you, I don't know if you're able to scroll down, but we have a voter resource hub. There we go. We have our BVM ambassadors. We work with youth and adults. It's a leadership development program. They're doing this work. Voter education, we develop a curriculum, which we will come wherever you ask us to come, to church, school, community service agency. And then, you know, we also have links directly to the Secretary of State's website. Because what we're encouraging people to do, Al, is we need you to look up your ballot. Stop going to the polls not really clear about who's all on your ballot. Pull it up beforehand, research the candidates, what do they represent, what do they stand for, and then you go and you make informed decisions.
Well, today, we're out of time now, but
okay.
We've given people their marching orders. Today's the day. You got to go vote. I'm Al McFarland. Thanks to Anika Robbins, Black Votes Matter, Minnesota. And thank you for listening. Do your job. Vote today. Vote. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio. Here we go with some soul craft.